Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? Who's there? What's going on?
You're listening to our number two in the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
I don't.
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Welcome back. Hour number two here on a Football Friday, the SEC Media Days Afterglow edition of Football Friday. As we take you back through some of the best of SEC Media Days today, by the way, the SEC did reveal the results of the media voting order of finish and the ACC or all SEC preseason team, and it went pretty much according to Hoyle. We will give you the full rundown a little bit later on, though. Alabama over Georgia in Atlanta. Alabama, an overwhelming favorite to win the championship, and 10 players, a record, 10 players on the first team preseason all-SEC team. All right, we had an opportunity to go all CBS TV as well when we were at SEC Media Days. Adam Zucker joined us, the CBS studio host, and Gary Danielson. Let's start with Adam Zucker.
Adam, good to see you again, man. How are you?
You too, Tom. What's going on?
Man, I'll tell you what. Nick Saban Day, everybody's looking for something, looking for the quote, the soundbite. Now, you were in the room.
Oh, yeah.
I want our listeners to take a listen to this. This is the quote-unquote rant. The one time Saban got loose a little bit. And we know, we joke around about it, but we know when he's getting fired up when the ites start.
All right, let's listen to this.
He starts with that. Take a listen to this. This was in the one of the, I think it was the print room, wasn't it, or
it
TV
was the
room?
TV radio room.
Yeah, TV radio room earlier today.
That's why I didn't get any nasty looks when I walked in.
Nick Saban talking about the possibility of being asked the question and answering the question, the possibility of a quarterback controversy.
You've reiterated Jalen Hurts as your starter, but people even want to keep saying that there's a quarterback controversy. Bozeman put it best
who's
a few minutes
that?
Ago.
You're the only one saying that. Well,
Bozeman put it best.
Create it right now.
No, Bozeman put it best, saying
I've
that they want drama.
That. All right, so I don't know who's saying that. Yeah, all right, so it's like me saying somebody said it's going to have a hurricane outside today. Is that right or wrong? It's just I just said it, so that means I created something that makes everybody panic and creates news and go out there and get people excited and interested and afraid. Look, we have a lot of competition at a lot of positions, all right, and we're going to play the best players. I think our players respect that, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to try to develop every player on our team to be the best player they can be, all right, but we're not going to tolerate people making stuff up, all right, just to create interest, which I understand and respect that's your job, but just not going to happen. I was waiting for that one, man. That was like a hanging curveball.
His second baseball reference of the day. He referenced Aaron Judge earlier today. You know the kid that asked the question. The kid was trying to reference a comment made by his center, Bradley Bozeman.
Bozeman, right. Well, here's the thing. So, first of all, that's Chris Brees. He's at the CBS in Birmingham, mm-hmm. which week in, week out has the highest rated numbers for the SEC on CBS. So I was watching their show last night, team coverage. So I went in there because Nick Saban was going to be coming to my room about a couple shifts later. I wanted to get the vibe, and I didn't have anyone in my room. So I walked in there, and so if you watch the video or you hear it, there's a point in the middle where he says, you know, people are always trying to start things up, and I understand that's your job. When he was saying that, I was standing behind the reporter, Chris. Saban is looking at him, and you could hear how he was trying to still ask the question early on.
Right.
And again, it's not even a question. He's asking him to comment on how people want to say something, which is like kind of the world we live in now, and I have a huge problem with it to begin with.
Well, Saban hates the people say. Who are the people? He always hates when somebody says, people say, like these mysterious people who are saying that. You
well,
know?
The leader of the free world is saying that exactly. all the time.
So yeah, right. right. People say, you don't even know who he's talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah. Everyone says. Well, so I'm standing behind him, and at that point, he had gotten an elevated response, the ites that you're talking about. But this, so the reporter turned to his one of his teammates, so either another reporter or someone, one of his shooters or someone who was taking notes, with a smile and like with his thumb up, like, "Hey, we got one."
Yeah.
As Saban was looking at him.
Yeah.
And I think that's when he then went in on the curveball reference. That's when he got a little more a little more animated. But look, when Media Week is this far in advance of the season, this is what makes news, and this is what a lot of people try to bank on making the news for the day.
He
I'm
said
looking for
hanging,
stuff for
he,
2 months from now.
I hear you. He said hanging curveball. I was ready for that.
It's the All-Star break.
It's the All-Star break. If that was the hanging curveball and he was ready for it, on that same thought process, you got to say that when he runs down all of the teams in the SEC that he has such great respect for and never mentions his cross-state rival, you can't just blow that off and say, well, he forgot. I mean, he is very prepared. I think he kind of, threw a little shade there, as the kids say.
So sometimes I wonder if that's the case or if you're asked, if a fan, if a reporter is asked or you're talking, hey, like, who are the best, who are the five national title contenders in your mind? Who are the top five? And because you know you're going to say Alabama, you don't say it originally. You list the other ones that you're thinking of because that's what you have to actually process to get to. And you actually forget to go back to it.
Yeah.
So maybe Auburn's always there. Maybe Auburn is above the parity because, to me, Auburn is the biggest challenge to them because it's at Auburn and because of the talent coming back and the new quarterback coming in. So, no one asked them a follow-up. At least Chris was in the room and was trying to tell. But Bradley, but Bozeman, but Bozeman's in Montana. At least he was trying to say something. No one said, Coach, about Auburn?
He did get asked about it on the SEC Network later, and he acknowledged it, and he acknowledged Gus and the quarterback.
All right, good.
So he did acknowledge it later. But like I say, I think the comments are very calculated and prepared. And the thing is, you know how it is. If you just mention one or two, you can get away with something like that. But he rattled off 10 of the other 13 teams in the league, including Vandy. If you go that deep, it was only Missouri, Kentucky, and Auburn that didn't get mentioned.
Right.
So if you're going to mention that, and he mentioned his whole division, which is his whole schedule. So if you're going to mention that many, now you're painting yourself in a corner. You might as well finish it off and give a comment on the last three teams in the league, too.
Yeah, you know what? So, I get it. Like you.
He also called the Florida State game a preseason game.
Oh,
he said the Chick-fil-A preseason game.
Well,
so maybe
there's that too.
But, so maybe it's not,
But that's also where people say the preseason versus the conference season, and it's semantics. I totally get it. And Vandy had a couple of respectable wins last year, and so he's maybe acknowledging that a little bit more.
Plus, he plays them. See, he mentioned everybody on his schedule just about. So, he goes, he's going to play. He goes to Vandy. So now maybe that's in his consciousness.
That's funny.
Adam Zucker with us.
Everyone will forget about this tomorrow.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, not the Alabama and Auburn fans. No.
Oh, no. Well, that's
We won't constant. Let them forget. We'll continue. Hey, look, if you were Auburn, I mean, I know that, bulletin board material, but I coached and these kids are emotional and everything else. You look for stuff. I mean, you tell me you don't take that pair. It's five sentences right there. You don't take those five sentences and put it on the bulletin board in the Auburn locker room and just leave it there and say, here Nick Saban said all the teams. Yeah. I can't think of a team. He says, I can't think of a team I don't respect. And it never mentions Auburn.
So, well, right. You know. I guess I think he's saying that. He's running through all the teams he respects, and then basically he stops because he's named almost the whole conference, and he's like, I can't think of a team I don't respect. So at least he didn't say, the ones I didn't mention, I don't respect. Because then, now,
too easy.
Now I'm buying in. I like to see peaceful resolutions to things.
You're the quarterback of this whole SEC on CBS.
Not a scrambling quarterback,
no,
but yes.
No, but you are the quarterback. Take us behind the curtain here. What is your responsibilities this week? You say your room. What are the kind of things that you're gathering? Because people think that, your job is to kind of facilitate all the rest of the people on this deal. But tell us a little bit more about what you do this
week. Sure. I'm getting a lot of stuff that we can use down the line. So I remember that back in the day, you'd go to media weeks as a TV guy and you'd get, you'd cover the event itself. And then as the season got closer, you'd use a lot of the sound that you got.
File footage.
Well, you'd use the interviews about the season closer to the season.
Right.
What I'm trying to get is little anecdotes from the coaches that we can run in the pregame show on College Football Today on CBS in September, October, November that are more just kind of personal things.
Right.
I talked to Coach Saban about his meeting with Mark Zuckerberg for a while. That was really cool.
Yeah.
I asked him which of his former assistants reminds him most of himself. And I thought he might go with Will Muschamp because that's who I would say, perhaps, with the fire, maybe the fire in the belly. But he actually gave a more interesting answer to say that he encourages his assistants not to be like him.
Right.
And to be you. And, you know, interesting conversations. Talk to him about, you know, what's next for Jalen Hurts, about his stable of running backs, who becomes the harder hitter, who the hardest hitter on the team now that Reuben Foster is gone. Leonard Fournette used to tell me about how Reuben Foster hit him harder than anybody's ever hit
him. Well, we saw that kid as a freshman on kickoff duty. We didn't think he'd make it through his college career because it would be like that boy's going to kill himself. I mean, because he was that kind of a guy. He was a head down guy. They had to train him to get his head up, and he had, you know, the cowboy collar and stuff like that. And you just you know for his sake, you hope that you know he'll be able to continue his career. But he did make it through, and I think he's going to be great in the NFL.
Yeah. So he mentioned Sean Dion Hamilton and Rashawn Evans and who's going to be the new leader there. I asked him about the new rule, not the new rule, but the enforcing of the rule that says coaches can't go on the field.
Right.
So he mentioned he used the analogy several times today, but he said it's like we're trying to hit a fly with a sledgehammer. And I kind of get it. It's a little thing that kind of happens here and there. And if you try to squash it completely, you might kind of do more damage than you really needed to. And I asked him about Bob Stoops retiring because, you know, Bob Stoops was like a heel for the SEC. He would call out all the flag waving and call out some of the elevated SEC rankings in his mind. And
he was the king of beating SEC teams that were downtrodden and didn't.
Well, right.
You can make that case.
When Coach Saban called it a consolation game, Stoops took issue with it. But turns out they're really close friends.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of the footnotes for my conversation with Nick Saban. A lot of my conversations were to just get a general idea. And even though I'm sitting there and there's a camera rolling, I just kind of want to know stuff.
Yeah.
So I just want to get a vibe and talk to them about that. Talk to Bielema about having a baby.
Yeah.
Of course. Sumlin about the pressure that's on him. A lot of things that stuck out. And we're having fun with the players.
Yeah.
Brian Jones is here with me for the first time, which is just
the best.
He's having a great time with the players. You know, fidget spinners are all the rage.
Yeah.
I got a young kid loves fidget spinners. I'm going home with 14 SEC fidget spinners as a result. I have to pay back our production department, I think. But BJ's got these kids answering questions while they play with the fidget spinners.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
So you're staying tragically hip is what you're telling me. I mean, that's your job.
Just tragic.
You're going to be tragically
hip. Just tragic, man.
Adam Zucker with us from the SEC on CBS. And, of course, we talked to Gary yesterday, and I go back years with Gary. And, you know, it's very interesting for him, you know, getting the band back together with Brad Nessler. I had forgotten how many years they worked together back in the day at ESPN and ABC and so on before that was broken up. So that's kind of an easy transition. And as great as Vern was and as great as Vern was last year, and I just because Vern, there was some criticism of Vern in the last few years and so, but I thought Vern had a great year last year. I mean, I thought he was tremendous last year. Having said that, you know, it's got to kind of be a little bit of a new energy, having Brad Nessler in the first year of him full time at it as well, and kind of bringing new juice to the whole team.
I hung out with Brad last night, and I can't wait. And I told him, I was like, listen, I apologize in advance if I call you Vern when I do the update for you. Brad Nessler is one of the few who makes, just when you hear the sound of his voice, it just feels bigger already. And I, you know, he's up, he's the next one.
Along with
Vern and, you know, guys who you flip on the TV and you hear the voice kind of like the way Musburger would introduce a game, too.
Yeah.
It's a thunderous excitement. And
you know, it's big.
Big. And I'll also kind of separate Brad from a lot of other people. And the reason he is a even greater fit with CBS and as a Vern Lundquist replacement, if you want to call it that, is because like Vern, there's no diva juice. He's chill.
You see him today. He's got a Tommy Bahama shirt on, no socks. He was working Radio Row. Looked like he just came off the beach, and you know, just kind of totally cool. I didn't realize he was that guy. I thought he was just totally button up guy all the time.
And oh no,
very very cool guy.
And he's a hugger.
I didn't know. I'm glad I didn't. I didn't even know if I want to know that.
Half hug.
And having said that, too, and I believe he's a Syracuse guy, another Syracuse guy, I just want to say.
I'm not sure.
Not Brad. I'm a Syracuse guy, yeah. I'm segueing to the next guy. We talk about Brad, the next guy. That guy that's doing the B games this or the second games, this year, Carter Blackburn.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. That kid is great.
So let me tell you something.
It's just a matter of time for him.
Well, yeah.
And he's a Cuse guy, right?
He's a Syracuse guy. Yeah. He's 2 years younger than I am, maybe three. And at Syracuse University, I'll try to keep this short, but you get there as a freshman. You hope to get a shift as a writer in training at the radio station. Because within the Newhouse School is WAER, which produced Marty Glickman, Marv Albert, Bob Costas, Sean McDonough. The list goes on and on. But Mike Tirico and Ian Eagle, Dick Stockton, all these guys.
Yeah.
So all these guys.
Damon Amendola.
Damon Amendola.
Used to sleep on my couch if I don't mention D.A.
He's great. I went there too. Another guy who's right in between me and Carter age-wise, but Andrew Catalan, who does NFL on CBS.
Right.
He does all kinds of golf work, tennis when we had the U.S. Open. He's phenomenal. When Carter came along as a freshman, as a writer in training, and it takes you about a year and a half before you can get cleared to air, and then you're usually a junior before you do any play-by-play. Mm-hmm. When Carter came along, I was either a junior or a senior, and we all as a class were like, oh. Like when they announced that the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama has been found.
Right.
Like Carter Blackburn has arrived. And sure, he was in position to replace Vern this time around.
Yeah.
But he would be the guy. He's obviously going to be the understudy, the guy doing the doubleheader games. He's going to be the guy doing our top cable game when he's not doing an SEC game. And he's awesome.
Now, is Rick Neuheisel going on those second double half of the Danielson said he thought that Neuheisel was going to be a part of a three-man team on the second half when they do doubleheader games. Is that right? Or is it just going to be Aaron Taylor and Carter?
Gary said that.
That's what Gary said. I said, is he taking the guitar with him or what? So I don't know Gary. Gary, I think, just makes it up. Gary doesn't pay attention in the offseason. You know, he loves to not pay attention in the offseason because he wants to kind of recharge his batteries.
Maybe he doesn't pay attention to what's supposed to be public or not.
Oh, okay. All right, so we'll just leave that one right there on the table. Now, he also mentioned, and he and I talked about, you know, you got play-by-play chops. Adam Zucker with us from CBS on or SEC on CBS. And we talked last year about you really enjoy the studio gig.
Love
it's a
it.
Different lifestyle. You got young kids, young wife, and all that lifestyle going on. And for you, it's kind of you're into a good rhythm, being able to boom, be there in New York and be home and not have the, you know, out there, you know, kind of making a career decision a little bit to take yourself a little bit out of that mix play by play wise.
I never threw my hat in the ring for any play by play job in the last decade.
Yeah.
I love my life. I love my wife. We have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. And after I replaced Tim Brando, suddenly I had a social life, too, because instead of being at the station at the studio till 2 a.m. on cable watching our Mountain West game go final and then doing the highlight show, I would get done with our post game and then head home. And my wife and I could go out for dinner and go to something we're invited to, whatever
right.
it is. I love my life, and I just... Like I think it was Jimmy Buffett quoting Mark Twain when he said, want what you have. And
you know, it's
I
interesting
really do.
Because you seem to be a guy, too, that doesn't, you know, you take the time with everybody and so on. And I know you're just a few years into this since you've taken over that role. But do you find yourself I'm blessed to do a show, a weekend outdoors show that's syndicated on 120 stations across the country. And I just about once a month, about the time the check shows up in the mail, I thank God. I said, I can't believe I got this opportunity. I mean, this is wonderful, and I hope it just, you know, continues and you know that things happen and so on. But do you just find yourself thinking, man, this is great. I'm you can't say I've arrived, but on the other hand, you must just count your blessings that you're in such a great, you know, great spot with CBS.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it so much. And I try not to, like you said, I've arrived. And it was Nick Saban earlier today who said, once you've decided that you've arrived, you die.
Yeah.
And so I try not to get complacent. I try to stay fresh. And, you know, you travel with your wife.
Yeah.
And maybe when my kids are older, maybe I will go and do games
right.
or go out on the road more. But I love what I have. And it's not so much like you were saying about the check in the mail as much as, so the Final Four ends, we do some draft-related stuff, and in the month of May and June, I coached my son's baseball team.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that if I were on the road. If someone comes and tells me from CBS, hey, we need you to go on the road now,
Yeah.
Then I have to go on the road.
Is there a little broadcasting bucket list for you? I mean, would you like to be sitting in that tower at 16 at the Masters someday? Or is that not something that interests you? Or would you like to do play-by-play at the Final Four? I mean, what is it that's on that little list that you still feel like you might want to check off down the road?
I don't have that. I would love it if in addition to the SEC championship, we were on campus for some more games when it's warranted.
Yeah.
So, like, when Alabama went to A&M to open the season on the SEC on CBS, it was always week three because the U.S. Open being weeks one and two. That was an on-location deal. So Brando and the guys were on location. I would love if there would be a couple more of those.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid of flying.
Really?
I'm the worst.
I don't like it either. That's a little bit of me. I'm not a big fan of it really either. I don't know why. I did it for years and years, and then all of a sudden it happened when I got stuck on a tarmac in Philadelphia. The air conditioning went out on the plane. There was a thunderstorm, and we couldn't get off the plane, and we sat there for an hour and a half. And that was the first time I ever felt claustrophobic on a plane. And since then, I've flown a few times when I was doing play-by-play for some arena teams and things like that, fly out to Utah and stuff. But it was, but I'm not a fan of it either, so I'm with you on that, man.
Yeah, I mean, so I get to go to the Final Four. I don't call the Final Four, but I do a four-hour show.
Sure.
Courtside at practice, and then the day of the game I'm part of that coverage. So, you know what? I guess something's wrong with me. Maybe that I don't have more of a bucket list. I don't know. I'm just. Right. I guess when I'm off duty, I'm kind of more into just, I don't know, getting my disc golf game
on. Bucket lists are funny. My bucket list had on it to go to a Stanley Cup final game. I've never been to a Stanley Cup finals game. I played hockey in college, and I've been to playoff games before and so on. So anyway, it comes to Nashville, which is not far from where I live in Tennessee. And I got my credential request and so on, came in, and it said, would you need our credentials to go to the Stanley Cup Finals and everything else? And I have teenage sons who are big Predator fans. And I sat there, and everybody's like, you're going to the Stanley Cup Finals. Are you going? I said, I got to be honest with you guys. I'm chilling with my sons on the couch at home watching with three teenage boys watching the Preds. I can't imagine being at the arena while my boys are at home watching it by themselves. I'm going to kick back and watch it with them. And, oh, by the way, I'll be in bed 15 minutes after the game.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, it was a bucket list thing, and I passed on it. I was like, no, I'm not going. The hell would I stay
here?
Well,
you know what? Having a son and having a meaningful relationship with your kids is like the most bucketed possible thing on the list. So, you know, my son this year, and I haven't put pressure on him, but my son this year finally was really getting into baseball. Mm-hmm. And I coached him. It's the third straight year I coached him, trying not to be too pressurized on him. Because when I get coachy and my voice, like, I scare people. Right. And so he got so into Aaron Judge this year. And I called Aaron Judge's home run derby on CBS in Omaha.
Oh, yeah.
Probably my last TV play-by-play moment was actually doing that with Frank Thomas. That was really cool.
That is
cool. You know, I was really cool. And I actually heard my voice when they were doing the College World Series home run derby this year on ESPN. But the fact that it was Monday and I was down here, and you know, it's like, talking to him on the phone about it, and he had gone to bed way before the finals. But fact that he smacked those home runs, and I'm excited to take him to a couple of Yankee games before the football season
starts. Wait till next year. Bryce Harper swears he's going to do it next year in Washington because it's at his home stadium. So if they could somehow talk Mike Trout into it, and if Aaron Judge does it and Giancarlo Stanton does it, it could be. I'm a Seamhead too. I love it. I'm a Yankee fan going way back, and it was a real fun 2.5 months of Yankeeville, and now it's like, my gosh, they're in the midst of their worst losing streak since 91, I guess.
Many injuries. Oh, and I know that's not the team that your audience is that focused on, but I will tell you, as bucket list things go, growing up in New Jersey, I wanted to cover the Giants or the Yankees big time.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did get to do, it's almost 10 years ago now, but I was allowed to freelance with a local station in New York. So I was working for the local Fox affiliate before I was fully on CBS broadcast television. And I got to cover the Yankees when it was Jeter, A-Rod, Pettit, Posada, Sabathia, Matsui, Rivera.
Yeah.
And I covered them for about a year and a half, including the World Series win over the Phils. So.
My quick Yankee story, 1978, I'm a freshman at St. John Fisher College in upstate New York, and I'm already on the staff for the newspaper there, on the sports page there. And Joe Altobelli, who is from Rochester, New York, wins the National League Manager of the Year award. Joe Altobelli is my father's personal friends with Joe Altobelli. He calls Altobelli, and Altobelli sends us three tickets to the 1978 World Series in, you know, with the Yankees and the Dodgers. I tell the guy, the editor of the newspaper, hey, I'm going to be down there. He says, hey, file three stories for us while you're down there. So I'm 18-year-old freshman in college, and I'm covering basically the World Series.
Oh, my.
And we had to pick up the tickets from Elk the Belly. So we call ahead to his hotel. Oh, come on in. Jack Clark. Remember the old slugger?
Sure.
Jack Clark is in the room with Joe Elk the Belly. I sit down with a Lanier tape recorder and do the first interview hours after Joe Elk the Belly is the manager of the year. File that thing back with the college paper and then did two stories and went just my dad and I staying across the GW Bridge into New Jersey and going back and forth for Yankee. That's when Lou Piniella had the hit in the 12th or 13th inning, scored Reggie Jackson. Everybody's chanting Lou. And those three World Series games with my dad when I was 18 years old is probably the greatest sports memory I have. And so I look to try and do the same thing for my sons at some point.
That's it, man. That's really cool. Because you can feel that meaning, but you look at them and then you see like the dream awaken.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, Adam Zucker has been our guest. Another great year for you this year. Good luck with that. I appreciate you coming by and spending some time with us, and I'll give DA your regards.
Oh, well, yeah, please, if I don't see him first.
All right, man, appreciate you.
Thank you.
That was Adam Zucker earlier this week, SEC Media Days. We continue the SEC Media Days Afterglow. Gary Danielson came in. We talked some football SEC style for this upcoming season with the CBS sports color analyst Gary Danielson. We'll have that next. I'm Tom Abraham. This is 730 1039 The Ump.
Wipe your paws. It's time to enter the doghouse.
Welcome back to a special Football Friday edition of the Tom Abraham Show. It's our SEC Media Days Afterglow edition. We're bringing you the best of the best from the week at SEC Media Days. I was joined by former Lions and Browns quarterback and now CBS analyst Gary Danielson came and sat down with us on the set. Take a listen.
Gary Danielson just coming over to our set right now as we speak. Of course, Gary with the SEC.
I'm here.
You got cherry picked is what happened. I know exactly. What's going on. You got cherry picked. How are you, my friend?
Good. Ready to go.
I was just talking to Adam Zucker. He does such a nice job in studio.
He does a great job.
He really does.
A great job? I really thought for a while he might even be in the running to be replaced for.
Yeah.
We've been really lucky to get Brad. I mean, that was a great hire for CBS, but I think Adam is just so solid.
Well, no, and I'm not telling stories out of school because he told us this story last year on the air too. Yeah, young wife, kids, and everything else. And he said, to be honest with you, I like just doing the studio.
I know he told me that too.
The travel, it's not easy what you guys do.
Absolutely,
all that travel and prep.
Well, it's a different lifestyle, and somebody asked me like, you look so ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 65 years old now.
Yeah.
And I go, I think why it works for me. I get some time off. I mean, I admire what you guys do.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do a college football show every day. I would burn out on it.
We try not to.
I know.
I'll be honest with you. I tried to do some basketball.
Some guys do. Some guys do.
Well, we get shot. If we don't do some college football every single day. David Moulton is my longtime personal friend. That's how I met you. And David would have the same thing. And I've done radio in New York and then in the South the rest of the time, Florida and Alabama, Tennessee. And it is if you don't hit it every day.
But I step aside. I have 100 requests, and I go, listen, call me in July. I really got to get away from it. And that way I'm ready and recharged, ready to go.
Well, it's funny because when I talked to Tony Barnhart earlier, we do a thing called Tradition Tuesday. We were talking about the tradition of SEC Media Days and how this all started, Sky Writers and all this stuff back in the day.
Right.
And Tony told the story, and we talked about how even 20 years ago, when you went out and talked to coaches and players, and stuff, it was the first time you had any contact with them in like three, 4 months.
Right.
Now it's constant. It never goes away.
I really do think that this is a,
I think the NFL's made a mistake doing it, to be honest with you. I think it's kind of hurt the NFL a little bit because there's never a break. You never want it.
Yeah, I don't know if these media days are even needed anymore. It's great for you guys to get to talk some people, but there's so much information out there now.
Yeah.
I really stay away from a lot of it. I don't read these magazines because what happens is I get into my head and I start spitting out stuff that somebody else thought of.
Yeah.
I like to keep my ideas to myself and figure it out myself because anybody can read these things. I just try to.
It's why I never listen to other shows. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Because
if
I listen to another show, I'm going to find myself saying something that somebody said, right. And if I say it, I say it generically. These are good resources because these guys go.
Sure.
I mean,
every
player's
exactly.
names and
sports.
Things like that. And is that kid a junior or a senior? Yep. I can go find
it.
In there. Gary Danielson with us. You mentioned Brad Nessler. You guys did work some together last year, and it was a great run with Vern, certainly. But there's got to be a rejuvenated thing anytime there's a change like that going into this year with a new team right off the top, right?
Well, you know, last year this kind of kicked off the farewell tour for Vern. And, you know, we had an idea what it could be. It was just so much better than we thought. The whole league got involved, the coaches, the players, and then even the fans. And it was a fitting tribute to Vern the way it ended, and it was great. One of the things I was hopeful for that, you know, Vern has built this job, basically, the play-by-play job, as I think the top job in college sports now, the CBS play-by-play 330. And I was just hoping we would find someone that would take this job that could take that status and stature of what Vern had built. And we were pretty lucky to get Brad. I mean, he's one of the top guys, pro, college, whatever. And for him to take this job and leave ESPN and ABC for this job, the SEC should be thrilled. And I am. We did 7 years together. So I know what he can do. And
that's right. I forgot about that. You guys worked together doing Big Ten games. And
ESPN, we did. And then we went to ABC together. And we got separated. Management decision. I was put with Brent, and he was with Bob Greasy. And, you know, those things happen. But we're back together now, and it's pretty easy. It's going to be a great
cool
transition. The fans are going to love it.
And I also saw, looking at the schedule, more doubleheaders than I've seen in the past well, which makes me wonder, who's doing a doubleheader game?
Well, it'll be Carter.
Carter.
Yes.
And
Carter.
That's another rising star.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, he's good.
And Aaron Taylor and Rick Duhaisel, I believe, will be doing the game. It's a three-man booth this year.
Rick is is Rick putting a guitar down, or is he still going to be singing in the pregame?
I think he's doing both. I think he really is,
You're going to do both. I've been having, you know, we featured the East a lot today because of Florida and Georgia being here.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time with Florida only having three true road games this season.
Right.
And looking at – and those road games being at South Carolina and at
Missouri.
They got
the best schedule.
They got the best schedule.
Right.
I'm like 10-2, and that's what a loss to Florida State. I think Florida's a 10-win team this year.
Well, if you go, this is the year of the quarterback, obviously, in the SEC. You know, I mean, it's been a while, maybe 2013, since there's been this kind of talent. But if you go all the way down, you know, you get to about number 10 before you start saying, does Florida's quarterback now fit in? And that's, in modern football, if you got a big question mark as Will Muschamp and McElwain will tell you, you know, we've been very fortunate. We've been winning with great defense. I don't think Florida's defense is going to be to the level it's been the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. It can't be. That took too many good players off of that team. So we will see. Yes, schedule-wise, I'd have to agree. I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. I think Kentucky will continue to improve. I think Vanderbilt will continue to improve. My sleeper last year was Missouri. They just, these teams that run these hurry-up offenses, their defenses just face too many plays. They can't make it to the end of the year. So I just don't know. Listen, because of schedule, you'd have to give Florida the best chance. But, boy, we've learned this. Going to this battle without a quarterback, that's going to be tough.
I was just stunned by the Malik Zaire thing because
You know, I have to admit,
I thought Kyle, you know, I thought the Felipe Franks kid was coming along.
Right.
You'd have somebody around for 3 years and you could stabilize that deal. To go get another transfer that couldn't beat out DeShone Kizer, who went 4-8, I'm like, really?
You know, that bothered me a little bit, but not as much as because of his style is so different from the style that Jim is trying to build at Florida.
Right.
He's trying to build a pro look with a pocket passer. Well, Malik Zaire can't run that offense. So now are you going to have a different offense for Malik? Are they going to give in to the fact that they can't run their offense? And if things get tough, what do? Do you go to a option running, triple option, zone read offense with Malik, and then you come back with Franks?
Right.
I just didn't see it as a great fit. I have not talked to Mac since this. I guess you just don't turn down a great player. Plus, you know, we did those two games in the SEC championship. I mean, Florida basically got there without a quarterback, so I guess they're figuring any quarterback will do. Exactly.
The funny thing is Jacob Eason, you know, checks off all the marks in terms of what you look at in a pro-style quarterback. But some of the Georgia people that I talked to said, you know, if they run into a wall or have some struggles at Notre Dame, you know, look out for this kid,
Jake Fromm. Yeah,
Jake Fromm has got a big-time brain.
He does.
Understands the game and has a great work ethic. That's been questioned a little bit with Eason. If he matures in terms of work ethic and whatnot.
Well, Tommy, you know what I think about Eason is it was tough for him. Yeah. That's the worst set of Georgia receivers I've seen since I've been in the league.
The line wasn't great either.
The line was below average. Chubb's coming off an injury. They had youth on the defensive line. Their secondary, I mean, I just looked at the Georgia team and goes, what happened? There's no talent on this team. And I couldn't believe it. And now you throw a freshman quarterback in there with a new staff. Kirby was still struggling with a lot of decisions. I just don't think it's fair to throw it on Jacob Eason. I thought he showed a lot of flashes for a freshman quarterback playing in this league. If they could put some talent around him, I think he'll be fine. But you're all right. Fromm has got a big resume, and he's a little bit more mobile. And the temptation with these coaches are when things aren't working, let's go to a running quarterback.
Yeah. All right, finally, before I let you go, there's been a lot of talk about this dynastic Alabama team that's gotten even more, some people think even more separation from the rest of the league. Ultimately, as a guy who covers it and does these games and whatnot, a lot of times people love a dynasty. They love when the Yankees are great or when the Montreal Canadiens or whoever are great. But on the other hand, is it hurting at all? Does it hurt the thing that where it seems like the league doesn't have as many great teams as it did 5 years ago?
Well, the league was definitely better 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. All right, there's no doubt. But I do attribute it to Alabama, but I think a lot of the coaching staffs are suffering from their belief that there's a shortcut to beating Alabama. Like, if we go the hurry up, no huddle with Johnny Manziel at quarterback,
And trick them,
we can beat them. Yeah, that's possible in a game. If you get Deshaun Watson throwing three back shoulder throws and Clemson has 15 guys drafted in the last 2 years.
And they run a pick play.
And not the last one, but the first one. Yeah. And, you get the run pass play for Auburn when Nick Marshall hit Sammy Coates there right at the end of the game. Everybody says, oh, that's how you beat them. You try to trick them. I think the fundamentals of the teams trying to beat them has really hurt the league. Texas A&M thought there was a shortcut with athletic quarterbacks. They've gone through three of them now, and it doesn't. Trevor Knight was fine.
Yeah.
But Trevor Knight had to produce 150 yards on the ground and 200 yards passing, or they lose. Josh Dobbs had to run for 150 and throw for 250, or they lose. Chad Kelly had to run for 100 and throw for 300, or they lose. Drew Locke has to throw for 350 or they lose. That much pressure on one player in this league is not going to work. They need more balance. As much as LSU was in one direction, these other teams have drifted too far in the other direction. Look at Gus. Gus, he's fine with Cam Newton, but we didn't have Cam Newton. What do you got?
Yeah.
Nick Marshall got him through a year with a good defense, but when he didn't have those guys, they got nothing.
Yeah, well, in three games, really, that year that they win, it could have been losses, and then everything changes if it goes the other way.
Alabama is going to move back more towards the middle. Somebody asked me what Jalen Hurts, how he can improve this year. Jalen Hurts is going to have to learn to be more of a game manager instead of an athlete, and he'll be better for Alabama.
Yeah, I said if he has the total yards,
they won't be as good.
If he had they're not as good. If he has it's the same thing with 2,000 yard rushers.
Totally.
You know, the Lions with Barry
exactly.
Sanders. How many 2,000 yard rushers in the NFL won a Super Bowl?
It happened once
with the Terrell Davis. I mean, it's you can't be that one sided a team. All right, Gary, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you've been busy, and it's always good.
That's where it goes.
I promise we won't talk until the season because I know you don't like. We'll talk golf. I'll call you. We'll talk golf.
No. I'm ready. Now,
talk it
easy.
Hey, bye. All right. When we return, Steve Shaw talked about the new emphasis on the coach's conduct rule and what the point of the whole deal is. Steve Shaw, the coordinator of SEC officials from earlier this week on our special Afterglow show for SEC Media Days wrap up. Right here on the Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039.
Call 866-485-9867 to get your bark on. Here he is, the head of the household, the big dog, Tom Abraham.
Welcome back, Football Friday in the Doghouse, SEC Media Days Afterglow Edition. We're giving you some of the best from this week yet, SEC Media Days. We do have Brent Sobolewski coming up in the next hour of the show talking some NFL. But How about SEC coordinator of officials Steve Shaw? He came by and visited with us and explained the new emphasis on the coach's conduct rule, if you will, on the sidelines. Steve Shaw.
Good to be with you.
It's good to see you again, man.
I go wherever Chuck tells me to go.
I hear you. Let's talk a little bit about some of the new changes. And, you know, a game changer could be this whole deal with, flagging an official for walking out on the coach for walking out on a field to argue with an official. Talk about that a little bit and how the coaches have kind of responded to that.
Yeah. So I'm not sure the coaches all love the new. It's really not a rule change. I mean, the rule's already in there. But over time, probably fault of the officials, you know, we haven't enforced it. We've allowed them, you know, a lot of latitude.
Is there a coaching box anymore? I coached for 11 years in
college
football.
There is.
There was a coaching box. And I see coaches run down to the 2-yard line and call timeout. Yeah. And I'm like, how do you get out of the coaching box?
Yeah. So we do. Now, we do allow them to come out to call timeout.
Right.
But so what this – the new – it's really a more mechanic, you know, interpretation. Mm-hmm. If they come out on the field of play and they are debating, talking about an officiating decision, mm-hmm. then it is going to be an automatic unsportsmanlike conduct. And people are like, wow, I mean, can't we give them latitude? But that's really what got us to that point is that it has to be black and white. Because
right.
if it's judgment, then people are going to say, well, you let this coach get away with this, but not me or whatever. And so now, and this is national, that if the coach comes out onto the field to play.
Meaning?
Their feet in the green grass.
In the green. Anywhere in the green.
And they are debating an officiating decision.
Yeah.
Then it's an unsportsmanlike conduct foul. Now, it's not going to be a surprise to them. We spent time. We had all 14 coaches in one room in Destin. And we looked at film. We talked about it. Now, I don't know that they all love it. But it's going to be enforced the same for everybody. And really the expectation is, I mean, the coaches are the face of our game. I mean, they are the icons. Yeah. I mean, and they talk to their players, you know, keep your composure, show your class. And quite frankly, as officials, we let coaches get away with things that we would never let a player get away with. And so I think this is really trying to, you know, enforce the rules that are on. And then you have to do it consistently, and you got to have the courage to do it every time.
Yeah.
And
well, it's interesting because I worked for a guy when I was coaching. I worked for a head coach who wouldn't allow any of the assistant coaches to cuss, even on the field in practice, because he said, we don't allow the students to do that. Plus, we're teachers. We're part of the faculty. So, right. And I was lucky to work for a guy like that. But you remember probably a few years ago when Brian Kelly got some heat, you know, from the Notre Dame community because he was dropping some real rough stuff out there. I was like, wait a minute. It's the head coach of Notre Dame. So I think that there is a certain amount of decorum that we expect out of our coaches, to whom much is given, much is expected. Right?
Yeah, and if they stay in the team area, if they stay in the white, then we're going to give them all the latitude that we've given them in the past. But it's just coming out on the field and debating a call is going to be an automatic unsportsmanlike. And remember, I mean, we changed. It's been this way for players for a long time, but last season we changed. If a coach gets two unsportsmanlikes, he's disqualified. So. They're all talking about it.
This is the first time, right? This is not like the first time he comes on the field, there's a warning. The first time he comes on the field, it's the flag, and it's 15 big ones.
It is. Yeah. It is. And, here's my hope. And, you know, do I want to flag coaches? Absolutely not. My worst day is when we flag a coach because I got to answer a lot of questions. But, you know, the expectation is it changes the coach's behavior. And they're talking about it. I mean, you know, many of them are talking about, hey, I need a personal get-back coach. I'm going to have somebody that can snatch me back.
I would imagine this extends to coordinators or anybody.
It does.
Coach,
it's any coach. Yeah. And so I think it's a change that if the coaches change their behavior, then it'll be unnoticed. But if they don't, you know, if it happens early, our guys – let me tell you, if our guys don't put the marker on the ground, that's going to be a bad day.
There's still a little bit of gray. Well, I say gray area, a little bit of judgment. I would imagine. Is there a difference between a question and a debate? I mean, a coach sticks his head. Hey, was it 73 or 71 that you're calling for that penalty? I mean, is that a flag or is that a question?
And that, as you represent it, that would not be. But what I've told the coaches, you know,
just don't
press us on that, because when you come out and you're hollering at the guy, he may not be able to hear you. I mean. And don't show us up. I mean, you might be saying, hey, where are you going to dinner tonight? But you're flailing your arms and all that. So really, the decorum on the sideline has gotten pretty bad.
Right.
And I think the intent by the rules committee, and this has supported the rules committee and our competition committee, said, we're expecting you guys to implement this.
Yeah.
So my hope is our coaches stay in the team area. We'll have and there's a responsibility on us as officials, because just to your point, we have to get to that coach and give him the information, because we know, I mean, these guys are intense guys. They want things to go their way. And when they don't, they're going to have questions, and we've got to, not stay away from them. I mean, in the past, sometimes you just wanted to stay away from that coach. You didn't really want to get over there near, but we're going to have to go to him and say, hey, here's what the foul was. Here's the player. Here's what he saw. Here's the rule. We're going to have to give them that information and not make them come out on the field and get us.
Yeah. Scott Cochran will have a rope around the waist of Nick Saban.
seriously, have talked about personal get back coaches because they're intense. I mean, they wouldn't be in their jobs if they weren't intense people.
Right.
And, at the intense part of that game, sometimes they're not sure that they're coming out on the field.
Right.
They just want information.
I got about a minute left, but I wanted to ask you, because my time in coaching was as a special teams coordinator. I was kind of a fan of jumping over the line. I thought it was a very athletic thing. I see there may be a safety issue there, but what was the impetus behind, eliminating that, and what can they still do in terms of jumping at least?
Well, so before, the rule was very complicated, depending on where they took off. If they landed on players, it was a foul. But I think the rules committee looked at it and said, look, this is a dangerous play. For the one guy that gets over clean, there's 10 or more that go head first down into the ground or kick a lineman in the head as they're trying to leap. And so I think they just said, look, we just need to take it out. So now, if you're within a stationary position within a yard of the line of scrimmage, you can do anything, jump, leap, whatever. But if you get a running start and come up, then if you jump or leap, in an effort to block that kick, it's a foul. And so they really just want to take it out of the game. First player
leap over the line. Okay. I mean, can you, on your side, can you run and jump and be on your side?
So
come down on your own side.
Well, no. So now it's not whether you land on people or not. I mean, the intent is if you run forward and leap to block a kick.
Even if you're 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. Because then you start pushing it where, okay, well, what if you're a yard? What if you're a half yard? Yeah, what if you accidentally land on a guy? I mean, so the intent is you can't run forward and leap.
So it's not necessarily leaping over the line.
It is not
easy.
Over.
You just can't leap.
Yeah. It takes that out, because the rule before allowed you to leap. If you got your foot in the neutral zone and leaped, then it didn't matter if you land on paper. But if you jump from behind the line or beyond the line and landed on a player, it was a foul. So we really just say, look, let's take that play out of the game.
Yeah, and that's quickly, what the rules people committed. Had asked me, in the old days, we used to see big, tall guys at the goalpost stand there and then leap and try to knock down. That's illegal now, right?
You can, if you're talented enough to do it, you can leap up and grab the ball, but you can't bat it
down.
You can't look like a volleyball player batting it.
Right.
That's an illegal bat.
Some guy in the NFL. Was it Jackson, I think. Remember Steve Jackson or whatever his name was? Harold Jackson from the Eagles. They used to put him back there, and he'd go up there and spike the ball down. If it was 2 feet over the bar, he'd get it. So.
Yeah. So that's a – if you can go up and catch it, legal play.
Right.
But if you spike it, bat it, then that's an illegal bat.
All right, man. Appreciate you, Steve. It's always good to talk to you for a few minutes.
It's good to be with you.
All right.
Yeah, good luck this season.
See you in Atlanta.
Look forward to
September 2nd.
All right. In the new Mercedes-Benz
Stadium.
It's
going to be unbelievable.
It'll be great.
It's going to be great. All right, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Shaw with the full explanation and a new coach's conduct emphasis. Can't say it's a new rule. It's an emphasis. All right, coming up at the top of the four, Phil Savage, Alabama radio color analyst, Senior Bowl executive director, Sirius radio host, NFL insider. Now he's an author. Phil Savage talks about his new book, which I've just started. Reading my advanced copy. And then Brent Sobolewski from Bleacher Report is in with NFL news. And then later on, Bill Hancock and our mashup of the coaches still to come. Right here on a special edition of Football Friday in the Doghouse on 730-1039. Yum.
Sports Radio, the UMP, because we care.